powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome in to Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Now, technically, we're in hour three here, but we started our show. First 2 hours are the huddle. I learned more than I needed to about Louisiana River Rats, but that's okay. If you missed any of it, don't forget you can go to 710sports.com, download the Huddle podcasts there on Tom, Jake, and Stacy, or wherever you download your podcasts. Today, though, for Tom, Jake, and Stacy, we're going to get started with a look specifically at the Seahawks offense with a question that I love. Now, Jake, this question stemmed from Brock and Salk's podcast, correct?
Yeah, it did actually. Okay. I mean, just kind of talk. They were talking through some things, and you know, there was one area that they just talk through things. Yeah. They don't talk anything important. Just through things, right? But there was one thing that really perked my ear up was, you know, they were talking about specifically about the offense and what has led to this change, what led to what happened in week one. And so I think that's kind of, you know, where we're taking our taking the shift over here from what has happened.
Now we're going to be ranking it 1, 2, and 3 as far as who gets credit for the shift in the Seahawks offense. But right before we do that, I do just want to stress how much of a shift there was. So when you just look at the way, like Russell Wilson's attempts, he had 35 attempts. That's not drastically different from his average of 32 attempts per game last year. But I think any Seahawk fan, the two of us watching too, would tell you that it felt like a different kind of approach on offense. They were aggressive early. They had a fourth down conversion in there for a touchdown. They were aggressive. Russell Wilson, 88.5% completion percentage, tied for third highest single game in NFL history with a minimum of 35 attempts. Absolutely phenomenal game from him with 4 touchdowns as well. On the flip side, you also saw just 6 attempts from Chris Carson for what I believe might be one of a career lows with 21 yards. He was obviously very involved, though, in the pass game. I really liked what I saw from the pass game and from the offense in general. I know you really liked it. It did, though, feel different. So a little bit of that will change. So first, this is Pete Carroll in cut number one saying he would like to see the running backs get a bit more carries than they did this past week.
First time out, it went fine. You know, with 7 and 6 carries wasn't enough, you know, for our guys, and we need to get more. You know, we were at 20. We want to get more than that in general. But when Russ is completing every pass, it didn't, you know, we weren't discouraged about the movement of the football. So, but we love running the ball. We always have, you know, and those guys will get more carries as we move down, you know, down through the schedule.
Now, that said, Jake, I think it's clear that this approach worked for at least this game. I think both of us are hoping that it's at least a mindset that lingers into next week and beyond, whether or not it's the exact same game plan. First question. When ranking who gets credit, if you're doing a little credit pie for this offense, I'm going to go first, and then you have more insight, so I want to hear what you say and if it's the same. Ready?
Yep.
Okay. Here's who I think gets credit. I think that it's kind of like a third. I think that Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer have been able to recognize, Pete Carroll in particular, what he has in Wilson. I know that he already knew that, but in my opinion, the outside perception, whether or not it's mine, is that Pete Carroll kind of heard criticism and changed his approach. Is that perception right?
Yeah. No. No, I don't think so. I don't think it is right that it is, you know, a third in terms of, you know, the direction or the shift in the Seahawks offense. If you were asking me to rank them in terms of what has happened, I mean, I think it goes 1, Russell Wilson, 2, Brian Schottenheimer, and 3, Pete Carroll. Now, it's not to say that when I say 3, Pete Carroll, that Pete wasn't involved in this or that he was adamantly against the shift of changing this offense. But certainly was the one that needed the most convincing, in my opinion, after all the years that he has played the game a certain way and stylistically, philosophically. But, you know, here in cut number one, I mean, Russell talking about how he wants to approach the game every quarter like it's the fourth quarter.
And rather than us having it be in the fourth quarter, I think to be able to, you know, make some stuff happen, I think we want to, I think we have a crazy stat of the lead of, you know, I think 56-0 when we had the lead, you know, by halftime and stuff like that. I think, you know, getting ahead is a key thing. You know, I definitely believe in finishing strong. I think we won a lot of games in the fourth quarter, you know, do some fun things in the fourth quarter and in the games, but let's treat every quarter as the fourth.
Now, this isn't something new. This isn't something that you just heard heading into training camp. This is something that Russell had been advocating and talking about all offseason, right? We have evidence. We have mountains of evidence of this, right? And sometimes you need somebody to push, you need somebody to continue to keep pushing. I think Russell, as the quarterback who has continued to grow, has continued to show Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer that he has improved every single year, that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and after the 2019 season, that, yeah, he's more than ready to take that on. And you know, I think Brian Schottenheimer, looking at what he has weaponry-wise this year compared to last year, you know, you're talking about Jerron Brown, you're talking about, a lack of Will Dissly, you didn't have Greg Olsen, you know, Jacob Hollister was the next guy up, you know, the tight end room wasn't that solid. The offensive line, I think, is much improved compared to last year. But you just hear Shoddy in cut number two, I think it has more to do looking at the weapons around Russ advocating for that, and him being able to trust in those guys to be able to go out and accomplish that game plan.
Obviously, Russ is just such a great player. When you give him the compliments that he has and you add a guy like Greg Olsen, who's a veteran in a weird year, right? We all know this is a unique year. A veteran guy like that gets it. You can get ready to play. You can feel good about your plan and the understanding of what we're trying to do. DK's been outstanding. You know, we're just expecting huge things from him this year, year two. Of course, Russ and Tyler, it's not going to take them very long. And, you know, getting Phil Dorsett has been great for us as well.
So you just look at those, and Stacey, that's why, you know, I give my ranking the way it is, because Brian Schottenheimer, in terms of number two, he's the one that still has to call the game, right? And for most people, they sit there for most offensive coordinators, they fall back on what they're comfortable with. For Pete Carroll, even for Brian Schottenheimer, the comfortable thing is running the ball, right? And I think that this is something that had to go a little bit outside of Schottenheimer's comfort zone, and this is something that I think Russell Wilson has been definitely waiting on and has been advocating for it publicly and behind the scenes.
Jake, I'm going to tell you why I like this question in general, specifically with this trio. My pie is a very boring pie in this case. My pie is like three, split into three equal parts. Hey, Pete Carroll, Brian Schottenheimer, Russell Wilson, they're all on the same page. They all agree this is the way it goes. It's kind of a boring answer, but that's just my assumption, right? Here's why I like the way that you did it. It's a very juicy pie. It's drama filled. I love it. I'm here for it. But I also think that that's probably a very simplified way to look at it, because my immediate response when I hear, hey, the people most responsible for the change in the Seahawks offensive identity is the quarterback. If it's anyone before the head coach, my ears perk up and I immediately think, what? That's not good. But I am probably oversimplifying it, because is it necessarily a bad thing or a sign of any bad thing at all if it's not Pete Carroll in the lead there?
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing. Now, here's the thing in this. It doesn't mean that it's Russell and Shoddy,
right,
and the offensive staff going. Yeah, there's no rogue thing happening.
Let's
here.
Be clear.
Pete Carroll is absolutely part of the conversation. That's why I say three, because you have to convince Pete, right? And Pete, for a long time, has said Russell Wilson needs to get his master degree. Now, I think Russell had gotten his master degree faster than maybe what Pete realized, or didn't have the personnel to do it sooner, you know, this, that, and the other. But I think that Russell's at a point now where, and they have the group around him, where Pete's looking at it and saying, okay, I think this is the time now where I believe we can actually go forward and make this happen, and not really get in the way of it by saying, hey, we have to be run oriented first. Now, we played that first cut of Pete Carroll, and still after that amazing game is saying, hey, we want to get our running backs more carries. But I don't think he's saying that to discredit the style of offense that they played week one. It's just saying, hey, It's not necessarily who we're going to be every single week. We want to be a balanced football team. But, yeah, we're going to lean into our quarterback. We're going to lean into Russell Wilson. And I think Russell has not only advocated for it, but he's proven it and shown it and backed it up with all the work that he has done. And then, obviously, it coming, you know, full circle onto the field there this last Sunday.
Also, who doesn't honestly love to see a really physical run from Chris Carson? Like, I know watching an offense like Kansas City or whatever is really fun, or, you know, like a more kind of finesse pass-catching running back is fun, but I feel like Seahawks fans are used to an offense, used to a running style. It is amazing and fun to see Russell Wilson go out there, throw it all over the place, and be the quarterback on a national platform that Seahawks fans know he is. But I would bet that Seahawks fans also love to see Chris Carson knock tacklers aside. That's really satisfying.
Oh, of course. I love it. I love his physical nature. I love on a screenplay, Chris Carson easily has the opportunity to go out of bounds, and you'd still gain the same amount of yardage, but no, he decides to lower his shoulder into two defenders and try and make them pay. You love to see the physical nature in which him and Carlos Hyde run with, and it'll be fun to see them. They're going to have their moments. They're going to have their amazing games. There's no question, but I think that you have seen this shift in this offense, and I think it's an exciting time. And I also believe, Stacey, that it's good. I think this is good personally, in the sense that the power structure, if you just look at it from contractually, the highest paid and also the guys that are making the biggest decisions, it's Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and Russell Wilson.
Right?
Those three. And it's traditional for a player to be the player and the coaches to be the coaches and the GM to be the GM. But in the NFL, once you get to a certain point where Russell has, where Peyton Manning has, where Tom Brady and Drew Brees, they have say. They have say in what happens on the roster. They have say what happens on the field. And ultimately, Russell's the one that's got to make it happen. So I think that there's a really good, healthy dialogue that's going on. And it's great to see that they're working together to continue to keep expanding and continue to keep growing, Stacey, because ultimately, yes, it's about winning. And they've done a lot of that, but it's about getting to the Super Bowl.
Jake, you gave us an answer and then you calmed our nerves. And I love it. I'm here for it. Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
Question number one. The Big Ten announced a plan to resume football the weekend of October 24th. Do you think the Pac-12 follows suit?
Oh, man. They should, and they should have been a part of this conversation the entire time. I mean, I think for them, sitting and saying, hey, there's some question marks about the health of our players, therefore we're going to sit out, I think, hey, it's honorable. I will have no issues with that, because you're talking about potential, you know, heart disease, right? And I think that the one thing that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me is, now that you have regular testing and they contract COVID-19, what happens to that risk of heart?
The myocarditis.
The myocarditis. I mean, to me, it's still there. So how does testing or more rapid testing, you know, change your point of view? So you either were worried about it or you weren't worried about it. And there's a great tweet and thread here from our own boy Howdy. I can't believe I'm saying it, but he has an excellent train of thought on this whole thing.
Boy Howdy knows what's up.
No, I love Boy Howdy. He's the man. He always has great stuff. So a great follow. So go check it out. But, you know, it's just, to me, it doesn't add up. It doesn't add up and make sense why the Pac-12 or the Big Ten even were sitting out in the first place when they talk about, you know, the heart of the issue. So I just think, unfortunately, they were holding out. And I want to see football for the Pac-12 and Big Ten come back as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think that when the Pac-12 announced, Curtis, do you remember when this was? The Pac-12 announced not that long ago that they were partnering with like Quidel testing.
It was
something
like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that they were going to be doing daily testing. And then The Athletic reported that would probably start at the end of September. So still 2 weeks or so out from when that would start. I think I wondered at that point before, and that was before we had a ton of news on the Big Ten, whether or not that would mean the Pac-12 was looking to restart things. It's still so confusing because there's so many moving pieces, particularly with the Pac-12, to find out exactly what their plan is, whether or not they plan to move forward. I wonder if part of the thing with the Big Ten is also that it feels like there's just so much more outside pressure on the Big Ten, whether it be the institutions they have, more public national pressure, or what. I mean, I'm an alum of a Pac-12 school. I love Pac-12 sports. I've been watching it my whole life, but it did feel like there was just more pressure on the Big Ten, and I wouldn't be shocked if that was part of the reason behind this, because you're right, Jake. Nothing necessarily that we know of changed with some of those short or long-term effects of COVID. All that information is still there. It seems like the only thing that changed was daily testing. And if that's all it was, well, it seems kind of weird.
It does. And also to have this unique situation where Larry Scott's sitting here saying, well, we also are running into issues with Oregon's policies, in-state policies, and then also California's in-state policies that they're not allowed to play football. And then you have Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, coming out and saying, well, no, that's not true. So what is it, right? I think this is just a huge dysfunctional mess. And if it turns out that Larry Scott was unclear about that, I mean, that's just failure of leadership.
Larry, question number two.
Number two.
Jared Kelnick had a bomb in today's inter-squad game. The Mariners have 12 games remaining. They are two back of the Astros. Should they bring up Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert to make a run at things?
Curtis, what do you think?
Oh, bring him up.
Really?
Get him here. Oh, yeah.
But that's not part of your plan. I mean, you have the...
Plans change, Stacey.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Jared Kelnick, I'm very excited about. I'm really excited about all those guys. I think they're going to be great pieces of this team. But I also think that what we can do as fans is completely ignore the lack of at-bat someone has and just buy into the hype and say, he's ready now. Like Shannon Dreyer, our Mariners insider on 710 ESPN, said this herself in an interview with Clayton the other day, that like, this isn't going to happen. Now, that doesn't mean that people don't want it to, but I mean, they haven't had the same kind of experience that they would in a normal season. Am I the only rational one here? Am I the only one that's thinking that this
is fine? No, I second
the
motion, Curtis.
Yeah.
Bring them up.
Let's be irrational, Stacey.
Let's go down. All right, I'm not that far away from Tacoma. We can go and pick them up, bring them over to T-Mobile Park, and we can get these guys there. To me, the way I see it is the Mariners are in a situation where they're kind of playing with house money. They weren't supposed to be here. They weren't supposed to be in this position. So I feel like they are looking at it going, yeah, we would love to make the playoffs, but we're not going to make any drastic moves to try and get ourselves there.
Have you guys ever
seen...
Does
that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think if it... if it happens, it happens, right, type of thing. And to me, if they brought up Kelnick, if they brought up Gilbert, to me, that would be a sign that they were like, yep, we're going for it. And I know it goes against... maybe
logic.
The development plan, okay? Not logic. I actually could
safety.
Argue logic the other way.
Okay.
I think Kelnick should take the leash off. I think this guy, confidence-wise, is very much like Kyle Lewis in the sense that he could benefit from having a successful... These are 12 games. Is 12 games going to hurt the development of Kelnick? If not, if it is, then he's probably not that good of a prospect to begin with. So I don't think that's the case. I think that this could be a shot in the arm, just like you saw other players that have gotten opportunities. Sean Haggerty, that guy came out of nowhere and was ripping it up. Maybe Kelnick could do the same.
Have you guys seen Stand By Me?
Yeah.
Rob Reiner movie. Vern is a character played by Jerry O'Connell, who's like the nerdy friend that's very afraid of all things and is like, I don't know, you guys, we might get in trouble. That's me in this moment. I'm like, but what about the at-bats?
206 says, Irrational Wednesdays. Got a ring to it. Bold Take Friday. Irrational Wednesday.
Irrational Wednesday.
They're all caution to the wind.
It doesn't, but because it doesn't, I'm for it. I'm very for Irrational Wednesdays now. Don't take that, Danny and Gallant. Question
number three.
Question three. How are you feeling about the NFC West after week one?
Oh.
Man.
guys, this is the toughest division of football. Like, it is not even close. I mean, you had multiple media members that were tweeting out and being like, hey, the NFC West, all the teams are going to be in the playoffs. All of them should be in the playoffs. And it's true. They're all playoff caliber teams. And even with the Rams being in a down year, Stacey, how high were you on the Cowboys? Oh, the Cowboys, they've got so much talent.
I don't remember.
They're loaded.
Ever saying,
they're loaded offensively and defensively.
I've never said this,
well,
ever.
Even a struggling Rams team who had a heck of an offseason, and not necessarily in the greatest of way, they were still able to go out and get a W versus the Dallas Cowboys, you know, week one on Sunday Night Football. Arizona Cardinals, Kyler Murray is electric, dynamic. The 49ers are still a very good football team and organization, but the team right now that worries me the most within the division is the Cardinals, followed by the 49ers. And the reason why I don't say the 49ers right now is they'll get healthy. They'll get healthier. But when you don't have Richard Sherman, who's going on IR for, I think, 2 to 3 weeks, and when you don't have Deebo Samuel, it hurts you a little bit. And I think that they are in a position where I think they'll be able to get by because their schedule is really light and easy, but they could put themselves in a hole that they can't recover from in terms of the win-loss record to really compete for the division. So we'll see how it all unfolds. But, yeah, I mean, Arizona Cardinals, they look good.
They look real good. Kyler Murray, man, he is set for what I think is going to be a phenomenal season. Let's see what's on tap.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey, brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
It's the Mariners versus the Giants tonight in a game that's been moved from Seattle to San Francisco because of smoke in Seattle. The pregame is at 5:30, first pitch at 6:40. It's going to be LJ Newsom with a 3.24 ERA and three starts versus Drew Smyly. We've also got Thursday night football tomorrow between the Bengals and Browns. We will not have a show tomorrow because of the Mariners game, so I just have to say right now that Joe Burrow is going to have a phenomenal game, and I'll stand by that. Actually, if it doesn't happen, I'm going to pretend I never said it. Let's be honest. Coming up next, we're going to take a listen to what Pete Carroll had to tell the media earlier today. This is Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Pete Carroll spoke with the media earlier today. Let's take a listen.
How is Rasheem Green doing, and are there any new injuries out of the game from Sunday?
No, it's going to take all week for us to figure it out with him, see how he comes back. He got some tests done today, so we will know. But otherwise, we're in pretty good shape. We're going to get Philip Dorsett back on the field today. We'll see how he does getting ready for the weekend. So we're in pretty good shape. Excuse me, I didn't mention Cedric. Cedric's still... he's still going to be hampered a little bit. We won't know until the end of the week on Cedric.
I was wondering what you think are the similarities and differences between you and Belichick when it comes to coaching style, how you view the game, that kind of thing.
But not about our heritage and our background at all?
Not, well, you know, if you'd like to go into that, I mean, whatever, however you want.
I just like pointing out that we have a little similar backgrounds, that we're both got a lot of Croatian blood in us. But other than that... for whatever reason, that nobody ever mentions that. I think that what's similar is our defensive background. You know, we've both been defensive guys our whole life, and we look at the game from that perspective, I think, in general. We both had the opportunity to be involved with their offenses a lot over the years, so you know, we've tried to, I know he does and I know I do, try to influence how we, you know, what we do on offense and how we do it. We both have really, I think, real strong commitments to our approach and philosophy, and doesn't really matter much what happens. We're going to pretty much be the same with, you know, who we are and what we want to get done with our teams. And, you know, I know that he is, and I know that I am, very fundamental coaches in this game, you know, as far as the tactical part of it and the technical part of it, and, you know, the principles of playing good ball and executing and, you know, not giving your opponent much. You know, we're both real committed in that sense. I think it's just kind of a general football outlook, but You know, the two of us, the two teams have really played similar in a lot of areas in terms of the big numbers and stuff and turnovers and winning games and divisions and stuff like that. They've been way ahead of us with a lot more wins than us, but we're out there kind of, so there's some similarities in the consistency.
Hey, Pete, with you've prepared for Cam Newton countless times throughout your career, but Cam Newton with the Patriots might be a little bit different. How do you try to figure out what they're going to do? Do you just kind of rely on what you've seen Cam do in the past? And what's kind of the process of trying to prep for that?
Yeah, we do have a real good background with Cam, but we don't know what they're going to do with him. You know, it's only one game, you know, so we don't even have the benefit of the preseason games to kind of try to figure it out. So, they have been, you know, notorious for changing from one week to the next and how they approach their opponents and all. So we have to go into this game with a real wide open look. It's almost like a first game. We have some information, of course, and they showed that they really wanted to run the football quite a bit, ran it 42 times in the game, which is a great commitment. But we'll see. We don't know. So, but I do like that we have seen Cam over the years in really big games and playoffs and all of that, and we've seen him really, you know, in the most challenging settings. So we do have a familiarity in that regard.
And what stood out most about his play in the first game you saw?
Well, that, you know, a Patriot team ran the ball 42 times and threw it 19 times. You know, now they've done that at times rarely, but not with Tom Brady that often. And so there's a difference in that commitment right there. And they've got a quarterback that's got extraordinary talents, and they're, you know, they utilized him and they got themselves really a very, very commanding win.
Pete, how the Patriots ran Cam Newton, how similar was that to how Turner and those guys ran him in Carolina?
It wasn't exactly the same, but we've seen Cam run every play that you could run over all these years, you know, and so there's a wide variety of things that he does and can do, and but they did show a willingness to run, you know, run him downhill and run him like in a wildcat situation, which is, you know, a great way to use your running quarterback, and so they're, you know, they got a lot of stuff, you know, and I know that they couldn't show it all in one game. And so we have to be ready for a very wide spectrum of offensive style. And so, you know, it's a difficult preparation in that regard. But at least we know what he looks like and we know, you know, what he is as a runner because of the years past.
And I talked to the NFL today about the smoke and the air quality. How much is the league consulting with the team? Or are you guys out of the loop on that in the NFL?
I can't tell you how much, you know, because I don't have anything to compare it to, but we're in direct connection with them, and they are monitoring what's going on, and as we are as well. Hopefully we get a good shift in the weather here by the weekend. It looks like it could change tomorrow some and into the weekend. So, but we're very cognizant of it, and we're working to figure it out.
Pete, felt like on Sunday your defense, particularly in the middle with Bobby and Marquise and Jamal, there was a certain physicality that was very evident. I mean, maybe even more so than it was last year. Is that a fair assessment? Do you feel like you saw that even on, you know, short completions or on running plays?
Yeah, I really did. I thought it was really noticeable. I thought Bobby played his best game pass defense-wise that he's played. He was the most active and most obviously, you know, on point with the breaks that he was making. And he impacted, you know, our play quite a bit. You couldn't, you know, missed the play by Jamal running and hitting. I thought Q Diggs, too, had some really good top-offs and some nice plays, too, as well as the rest of the guys. I mean, Marquise, for sure, and Lano Hill. And all those guys made some hits. Having all the speed on the field, we're faster than we've been, and I think it shows up in our pursuit. But the nature of these guys, they're going for it, and I really love it. I love the way that we were able to show first time out how we'd like to play the game, and there's a lot of improvement to be had. I'm glad that the message was clear, you know, that we're coming out and knock the hell out of you when you play us, and that was fun.
Man, you like to hear that from Pete Carroll. Just a minute or two here to kind of reflect on that. You know, a couple things, we couldn't include everything, but a couple things I think I in particular liked about what he said on defense. I think that a lot of fans were clamoring for a big step forward on defense this year, not just because it's the iteration of the Seahawks that we always associate with a Super Bowl win, but also because it's just fun to see. I feel like we have an appreciation for defensive play in the Pacific Northwest, and I liked that Carroll said, kind of confirmed everything that we'd been saying about it, that we'd been hearing from you, Jake, out at training camp. This defense looks fast. It looks like they have a chip on their shoulders now.
Yeah, and I think the reason why it feels so good for Pete Carroll to say that, to be able to sit there and say, hey, we're going to be able to knock the HE double hockey sticks out of you. I think that that is one look at it where it's fun to be able to call a defense that is aggressive, to call a defense with guys like Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams that even when they're, you know, maybe not in the play or the one that's making the initial tackle, they're coming to clean up.
Yeah.
They are going to hit you. They are going to have that second hit at the end. And when you're a receiver, when you're a running back, and you know that it isn't just going to be one guy that's coming to tackle you, you got somebody else that's coming to hurt you at the end of that run, it makes you make business decisions. It really does. And they displayed that on film in week one. And, you know, we've talked about Shaquille and we've talked about Dunbar. And I think that those guys are excellent in the run game. We need to see more consistency from them in the passing game overall. But I'm not worried about that, Stacey. I'm more interested to see the progression of this defense as they go along week to week because they have the makings to be, you know, pretty darn good.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we sum it up on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
The wait is over.
There come a wavy man.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
Seahawks wide receiver Tyler Lockett was on with our friends, Bob, Dave, and Moore, the other day. And there's one clip in particular that Jake and I really liked, I think because it's kind of funny. It's Tyler Lockett, who it sounds like in cut number four was just as surprised as we were to see the Seahawks unleash their passing attack.
I couldn't tell you. I always go into the game thinking we're going to run the ball. I think it was just something that maybe they seen in the Falcons defense that they wanted to be able to exploit. And so that's something that we decided to focus on a lot more.
I mean, the thing is, I'm not against running. Like, I think there are some people that genuinely are like, do this every single week. I don't care if Chris Carson has five touches as far as like rush attempts, not receptions, in each game. I really like Chris Carson. I think it adds a nice dynamic to their offense. And I do think that great offenses are usually great at multiple facets, right? It's not, if you look at the top passing attempts or top just passing offenses, they aren't always necessarily the best offenses and vice versa for rushing. But I do think it's still kind of funny.
It is, and it's also one of those things where you wonder, Tyler, is this gamesmanship that you're having right now just on the radio? Like, oh, I had no idea what the game plan was going to be. I had no idea that we were going to come out and throw it all over the place. Or there is that genuine feeling that all the years that Tyler has been here, it's like, oh, yep, we're going to be focused on the run game because it's just the way it is. And I can see that, you know, from Tyler's perspective. And that's why, you know, all the things that we have talked about in the offseason, the weaponry that Russell has, where Russell is at in his career, you know, hey, let him cook. But that's why I was nervous before the game that are they going to let him do that? Are they going to give him more opportunities? Or are they just going to be stubborn about establishing the run? And I think that it's one of those things, even for Tyler Lockett, it's surprising to see. Right, that was a surprising game to witness and be a part of. So it's where do we go from here? Right, is really the conversation at this point. And if you're Tyler Lockett, do you come into week two thinking, hey, we're gonna now pass the ball more because we were so successful with it, or do we come back to reality and say, no, we're gonna get back to our normal offense, which is trying to establish the run and then go from there. And that's the one that I'm really curious about with this group. And I think that, you know, with Bill Belichick and how smart he is, what do you think that he wants to do, Stacey? Bill Belichick, if you're Bill Belichick and you're game planning right now, what do you think you want to do versus the Seattle Seahawks?
I mean, I think Bill Belichick is going to want to take as much advantage as he can, just like he did week one against Miami, of Cam Newton's dual ability, the ability to, I think Dave Wyman said it best, that in an offense with a quarterback who can't do what Cam Newton does or isn't multidimensional, it's basically 11 on 10. You have a guy that's like a player that like will maybe help block, but once he hands off the ball, it's kind of, you know, he's out of that. And I think that when you have Cam Newton, that isn't the case. I just love the way that Dave explained that. And I think that's evident. I mean, Bill Belichick took advantage of that against Miami. Cam Newton had 75 yards on the ground. He had two touchdowns. He also was 15 of 19 for 155 passing yards and a rating of just over 100. So it's not like he was ineffective through the air. It's just that this team has played the Panthers, it feels like, every year. It feels like they are an unofficial division rival, right? So this team is already familiar with Cam Newton. I don't think that that makes it easier to face him. I don't think his injury history of late makes it easier to face him. And I think if week one proved anything to the NFL, it's that New England can still be an offense that takes advantage of Newton, even though they don't have Gronk anymore. They don't have as much receiving talent as they might have in years past, but they can still be deadly. And on the other side of things, I think there's concern there too. But I don't know, Jake, what do you think you do? If you're Bill Belichick and you're looking at the Seahawks, how do you approach that?
I know exactly what I'm doing.
What do you do?
I know exactly what I'm doing.
My key to win
versus the Seattle Seahawks is to pound the rock. I want to win time of possession. I want to keep the ball away from Russell Wilson and the Seahawk offense. I want to be able to attack this defensive line that is not very deep, okay? It's not deep. It's susceptible to the running game. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're going to see a heavy dose of the run against the Seattle Seahawk defense. And will they mix it up and be opportunistic with their passing game? Sure. But I think that they are planning on being very old school in their approach by running the football and hoping to play really good defense behind it. And I think that when you're the Seattle Seahawks in this fight and in this matchup, I would be cautious or careful about trying to play the same style of football that Bill Belichick is wanting to play here. When you talk about offensively, we're gonna try and ground and pound it ourselves as well. Right? It's something that I think that the Patriots are susceptible to, but I caution slowing down the tempo offensively. I think you keep the tempo turned up. I think you continue to keep trusting Russell Wilson to make great decisions. And this is the first time where, okay, they have Stephon Gilmore on the other side. That's great, right? He's a very good corner. He's one of the best corners in the game, but you have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. He can't cover both. You have really good tight ends. I mean, I think that this is a great opportunity for this group offensively to show that they can be dynamic against, yes, one of the best secondaries and one of the best defenses overall. So I just hope they don't lose their edge or their tempo by trying to, you know, pound the ball against this Patriots defense.
I do too. I would like to see, I wouldn't mind seeing more of it. It's not like it's not like three more touches or four more touches or whatever would upset me with getting Chris Carson involved and starting that run game a bit. I do wonder whether, and this is a little more of an X's and O's conversation that we don't have time for, but I do wonder if your passing attack, just how that looks different. Because I will say, I mean, when I look at their stats from last week, their corners, three different corners had an interception. Granted, that was against Miami. It was against Ryan Fitzpatrick. Love him, but not Russell Wilson. So I'm wondering, like, is that something that Seattle tests early? Is that something that, you know, you just know that it's going to be a different story for you because you've got Russell Wilson? I mean, what's that mindset like for instance, Wilson and Schottenheimer right now?
Yeah, I think when you're looking at Wilson and Schottenheimer and their mindset, I know Shoddy is definitely looking at the matchups, and he definitely wants to make sure that they're taking advantage of what the defense gives them each week. And I think that's a great way to game plan and the right way to game plan and what is most effective. I know for Russell Wilson, it's the same thing in terms of always wanting to, the end goal is to win football games, right? So however you got to get it done. But I think that they have, as a collective group, seen the opportunity of what happens when you play with high tempo, when you are motioning pre-snap penalty or not penalties, but motioning pre-snap and doing shifts. They were top 10 in the league in week one, Stacey. I don't know if you knew this, but they were top 10 in pre-snap motions and shifts out of anybody in the NFL. And compared to years past, they've been towards the bottom. So there's a huge difference there, and putting strain and being in attack mode, I think, is something that they are not going to stray away from. And I hope they don't stray too far away from that, because I think that's when this offense is at its best.
It sure will be interesting. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be a phenomenal game either way. We are not on tomorrow. That we'll have a Mariners game, the rescheduled Mariners game. Instead, it'll be the second of the series that starts tonight. Bob Davenport is next. This has been Tom, Jake, and Stacey.